everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is about 7 past the hour. Oh, nasty stuff going on, huh? Nasty stuff. Before we get too deep into ankle deep in this right-wing crapola that is sloshing back and forth from coast to coast and border to border in this poor dying empire, a note about the death yesterday of Leonard Wineglass. I don't know if you know who he is or not. He's been referred to as a modern-day Clarence Darrow. He was an attorney who defended people for their politics and not the crimes that they were accused of. He was 77. He died yesterday in New York City of pancreatic cancer. In 1968, Wineglass was part of the defense team representing the Chicago Seven. If you'll remember from reading your history, or maybe you were there, or maybe like me, you watched it on CBS from someplace far away from Chicago. That was the night when that's when I knew that my country was dead. That's when I knew that my Constitution, which is my country, was dead. That night. Anyway, Wineglass helped defend Daniel Ellsberg and Anthony Russo, who were charged with leaking the Pentagon Papers. Criminal charges against Ellsberg and Russo were eventually dismissed. Daniel Ellsberg has said he owed his life to Leonard Wineglass. Ellsberg said, quote, "He wasn't drawn to making money. He was drawn to defending justice. He felt in many cases he was representing one person standing against the state. He was on the side of the underdog. He was also very shrewd in his judgment of juries." Other high-profile defendants that Wineglass represented included Angela Davis, former Black Panther member, acquitted of murder and kidnapping in Chicago, or in California in 1972. Kathy Bowden was one of his clients. She was a member of the Weather Underground, was charged with murder during a 1981 robbery of an armored truck in New York. She was convicted. She was paroled in 2003. He also worked on the ongoing death row appeals of Mumia Abu-Jamal, former Black Panther, convicted in the slaying of a Philadelphia police officer. Tom Hayden, one of the Chicago Seven, said, quote, "He exemplified the best qualities of a Jewish upbringing. He questioned everything. He was a funny man, a man of wisdom and passion who would throw himself into deeply unpopular causes because he believed in human rights. A self-described radical friend of his, Debbie Smith, said today, "He had a wonderful observation about life. He was a wonderful gardener, had a huge collection of tree and plant catalogs. He had a beautiful place in the Catskills and lived in a teepee up there for a couple of years." Another colleague, Ron Kuby, described him as a lovely, gentle, caring man who lived his entire life on the left and never made a single enemy. Wineglass was divorced. He had no children. He's survived by two sisters, a brother, and several nieces and nephews. A private funeral will be held, followed by a public memorial this spring. Leonard Wineglass, if you don't know about him, look it up. W-E-I-N, Wineglass. It's amazing to me how all the heroic defenders of justice are always, without exception, from the left. Always, without exception. This hour is sponsored by Kay Petrini, who happens to be our education affairs correspondent. Thank you, Kay. This is what she writes. "In loving memory of my wonderful mother-in-law, Rita Petrini, Rita raised 6 children, showed her love through her incredible Italian cooking and baking, and remained an FDR Democrat to the end. We love you and we'll miss you every day, Rita. Jim and Kay." Thanks, Kay. I went through some things today looking for articles about Obama's continuing violation of his oath of office, and found them. The oath where he swears to uphold the Constitution, so help him God. Glenn Greenwald, writing at Salon, points out that one of the central pledges of Obama's campaign was, as he put it early in his presidency, was that the Bush administration had gone wildly wrong because the Bush administration, quote, established an ad hoc legal approach for fighting terrorism that was neither effective nor sustainable. A framework, this is Obama talking, a framework that failed to rely on our legal traditions and time-tested institutions, that failed to use our values as a compass, end quote. Instead of doing all that, Obama said during the campaign, Obama said we must fight terrorism only, quote, with an abiding confidence in the rule of law and due process, in checks and balances and accountability. We must never, ever, Obama said, turn our back on its enduring principles for expedience's sake. Mm-hmm. Yale law professor Jake Balkin writes that Obama, quote, has more or less systematically adopted policies consistent with the second term of George W. Bush's administration. And as Greenwald says, no rational person can argue that, or even tries to any longer, that Obama has not done that. To do so is just a banal expression of indisputable fact. Today, the Obama Department of Justice unveiled the latest and one of the most significant examples of its eagerness to assault the very legal values that Obama vowed to protect. The Wall Street Journal reports that, quote, new rules at the DOJ, Obama's DOJ, new rules allow investigators to hold domestic terror suspects longer than others without giving them a Miranda warning, significantly expanding exceptions to the instructions that have governed the handling of criminal suspects for more than 40 years. End quote. Wall Street Journal. The only previous exception to this 45-year-old Miranda requirement that someone in custody be told of their rights occurred in 1984, when the William Rehnquist-led right-wing faction of the Supreme Court allowed delay in telling someone of their Miranda rights, quote, only in cases of imminent safety threat, end quote. But these new rules put out there by Obama's Department of Justice give interrogators more latitude and flexibility to define what counts as an appropriate circumstance to waive Miranda rights. Now, there's more on this in a second when we come back, but if you insist on supporting this administration, please do so with your eyes wide open. Don't do what so many of us did during the last presidential election, and that was to project onto a very erudite and well-spoken blank slate what we hoped he was going to do. Remember all that talk? Well, yeah, you know, once he's elected, we can hold his feet to the fire. Yeah, we can get him to do the things he's not talking about during the campaign, and we'll make sure that he does things like, you know, walk the picket line when union members are told we're going to take everything away from you by some filthy, disgusting governor in Wisconsin. Remember all that stuff?
Hey! Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. Obama's relentless assault on civil liberties in this country is from the standpoint of people who insist on continuing to support his administration, it's becoming a bit tiresome to hear the same stuff over and over again that we listened to for 8 years of the criminal out-of-control Bush crime family. The latest here is Obama's Department of Justice deciding that the Miranda ruling of 45 years ago is no longer applicable when they, the Department of Justice, say it is no longer applicable. In much the same way that leading or joining in an attack on another country in complete violation of the UN Charter. You know, it's one thing to to get a UN resolution. It's something else again to follow through on a UN resolution without even notifying your own Congress. Now, that is the kind of behavior that is expected from Dick Nixon and George W. Bush and other right-wing criminals. But Barack Obama? Of course. So anyway, back to what Glenn Greenwald wrote today, quoting the Wall Street Journal, that the Obama administration is now pretty much following the pattern set down by George W. Bush's second administration. Greenwald writes, for that reason, the Wall Street Journal is surely correct when it calls these new guidelines, quote, one of the Obama administration's most significant revisions to rules governing the investigation of terrorist suspects in the United States, end quote, Wall Street Journal. Note that in 7 years of prosecuting the war on terror after 9/11, the Bush administration never tried to dilute Miranda guidelines, though doing so for them was irrelevant because they simply imprisoned even American citizens like Jose Padilla. But they never tried to dilute Miranda guidelines during the entire time that they corrupted on other levels the society. Ironically, it was the Obama administration this administration that defended the sanctity of Miranda back in late 2009 when the animals, the pigs, Cheney, Crystal, Limbaugh, Palin, attacked Obama for Mirandizing the underwear bomber as soon as he was taken into custody. Remember that? The guy that tried to blow up the jet over Detroit and he was Mirandized. And the right-wing trolls and bastards started in on him immediately? Well, back then, the Obama White House and its loyalists stridently argued that Miranda does not interfere with effective interrogations, and that in any event, it is a pillar of our justice system that should not be eroded. Amazing what 2 years does, huh? Now, as Greenwald writes, we'll undoubtedly be hearing from the same precincts now, from the very same people, that diluting Miranda is necessary to keep us safe, that it's fully within a president's right to change Miranda guidelines without Congress, just like, you know, a president can start wars on his own, and that it's merely a tiny little change that pales in comparison to the really important issues of the day. So for anyone who defends Obama's new decisions here, shouldn't you also admit that Rush Limbaugh and Bill Kristol were right in criticizing Obama back then? Huh? So if you're going to defend this decision by Obama, if you're going to stick with him, then you are squarely in the camp of the right-wing hogs that are destroying the country. That's not a very pleasant thought, is it? In other words, with the sweep of a unilateral pen, Glenn Greenwald writes, Miranda simply no longer compels the government to read you your rights if you're accused of involvement in terrorism, and FBI agents unilaterally decide that it no longer applies to you, Miranda. It's really something, isn't it? Huh? This, for you folks who insist that Obama is the man, does this mean anything to you? I mean, at all? One thing after another? How about this one? Anything? Are you still supporting the Obama administration? Oh, Mike! Oh, but the Supreme Court! He's going to support justices! Appoint them! We got to have a Democrat!
Get him up against the wall. Now there's one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. One last thing on this. As Greenwald writes, 2 weeks ago when Barack Obama issued his executive order providing for a system of indefinite detention at Guantanamo, you know, the place he promised he was going to close and do away with the torture chambers and the military tribunals. When he signed the executive order extending indefinite detention indefinitely, Republican Representative Peter King lavished him with praise. King has done the same thing with this Miranda decision, because this anti-Muslim terrorism-obsessed congressman has long been one of the leading advocates to do away with Miranda. And as Greenwald points out, it is becoming standard operating procedure now that in the national security and terrorism areas, Obama's most vocal cheerleaders are found on the Bush-following right. Do you hear any progressives or liberals who are clear-thinking? Because some of them are becoming mush-brained. But do you hear any applause about this? Do you hear civil libertarians say, hey, way to go! Way to go, Barack! Yeah! Screw that Miranda thing! That's been a real irritation now! Yeah, go, go! Do you hear that on the progressive left? Do you hear any liberals? Do you hear anybody? I'd like to know what the progressives in media who still support Obama, what they have to say about this. The last thing here, as Glenn Greenwald points out at Salon, when it comes to debates between the left and the right over the Constitution and due process, Miranda has always been viewed as one of the key defining issues. Richard Nixon was obsessed with demonizing the Earl Warren Court for providing too many rights to the accused. And Nixon's attacks on Miranda were part of a decades-long war by the American right on the constitutional liberties established over a half century. So, with a swoop of a pen, more than 9 years removed from the attacks on this country, Barack Obama has done more to erode Miranda than any right-wing politician could have dreamed of achieving. Just like that. So, for the people who write to me and get their bloomers in a wad because I have become completely and totally not in the Obama camp, I say to you what I've been saying to the general audience for years now. What will it take? What does it take? What has to happen? What does Obama have to do before you get it? What does he have to do? Or is there nothing? Could this man suspend the Constitution and you would still say, oh, well, he's a Democrat. Oh, well, you know, I got to vote for him again because, you know, there are going to be some vacancies on the Supreme Court and we have to have somebody like Barack Obama making appointments. Oh, do you really? Okay, then go ahead, chump. But let me remind you, I doubt if I need to remind you this, but one of the classic definitions of insanity, mental illness, is doing the same thing over and over again, and each time expecting a different outcome. So, this hour is sponsored by Kate Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. Her message: in loving memory of my wonderful mother-in-law, Rita Petrini. Rita raised six children, showed her love through her incredible Italian cooking and baking, and remained an FDR Democrat to the end. We love you and miss you every day, Rita. Jim and Kay. Thanks for the sponsorship, Kay. You know, we talk, people who identify themselves as liberals or progressives or whatever, in whatever forum we happen to have, if it's blogging or online radio or over-the-air radio or satellite radio or you know, a magazine, whatever it is, the people who identify themselves as progressives or liberals or what have you, we've been chasing ghosts for so long now. And the politicians on what used to be the left, what used to be the union-supporting, coalition-building, progressive left, and is now none of that, those politicians know that. So they keep, it's just like the right-wingers always dangle in front of the mouth-breathing evangelicals. All these little social issues that the right wingers say they're going to, we're going to pass a constitutional amendment that marriage is only between a man and a lamppost. Oops, I'm sorry. A man and a woman. One man, one woman. Even though I'd like to have six or seven women. But, you know, a man and a woman. Yes, we're going to do that. We're going to do that. We're going to do that. We can have, you know, you can have as many affairs and cheat as much as you want. But! And then they never do. But that's one of the ways, you know. Oh, and we're going to demonize the queers, too. Oh, yeah, we're going to get rid of all the queers. We're going to ship them all away. This is the kind of garbage, rancid chunks of rotting meat that the right-wingers dangle in front of these rabid dogs that vote them into office. And, of course, they never deliver on it. They just encourage people to go beat up gay people or go attack liberal organizations, blow them up, shoot them, kill them, chop them into little pieces. Well, on the left, so-called, in the Democratic Party, the Democrat, the DLC, Democratic Leadership Conference, and all these phony progressive or liberal organizations, they've been doing the same thing to Democrats. Hey, see that D after my name? I'm on your side, pal. Yes, sir. Yes, indeedy. Vote for me. And then as soon as they get into office, what do? You know what they do. So, some people in this country have already made the turn. Not very many of us. 5%? 10%? That's still a lot of people. That's, you know, is it 20, 30 million? out of 300 million plus. Maybe 5 or 10% of us have made the turn and understand thoroughly, completely, and fully that the Republican Party are Nazis, purely and simply. The Democratic Party is a wholly owned subsidiary, just like the Republican is, of capitalism, of corporate America. And while the Democratic Party is not quite Nazi or fascist, it is so close that splitting the difference is an exercise in futility. And yet people are going to continue to vote Democratic. Why? Why? What do you get? Now, I'm not suggesting that every Democratic or every candidate for public office, whether it's your city council or the federal office, I'm not suggesting that anyone who identifies as a Democrat is necessarily part of the problem. I'm saying there are some people who are running on the Democratic Party platform because they, I don't know, they're too afraid to try as an independent. But if the fear is there, maybe you ought to consider whether or not they really are going to deliver what they say they're going to deliver. The Democratic Party is part of the problem. What does it take? The Democratic Party, the leadership in Congress, for 8 goddamn years sat there. Well, not all 8, but when they had the power, refused to indict war criminals that were leading the United States. Refused to. Oh, it's off the table, she said. Which made them complicit in the war crimes. Period. You got a different take on that? You think Nancy Pelosi, do you think somebody, I mean, there is law, settled law. You can be an accessory after the fact of a hideous crime if you just withhold evidence. What did Pelosi do? No, it's not an attack on Pelosi. I don't give a tinker's damn about Pelosi or any of these national Democrats, except insofar as they are assisting in the destruction of our system, our society, our country. And it's happening right before our eyes. And I just wonder sometimes, you know, what's it going to take?
Oh, here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, thanks to Kay Petrini, who sponsored this hour, in loving memory of her mother-in-law, Rita Petrini. Kay writes, Rita raised 6 children, showed her love through incredible Italian cooking and baking, and remained an FDR Democrat to the end. And she adds, we love you and we'll miss you every day, Rita. Signed, Jim and Kay. Thanks, Rita. Now, There's a prosecutor in Indiana. What the hell is going on in Indiana? I mean, I realize that's the state where the KKK was born, but that was a long time ago. What is going on? An Indiana prosecutor, Johnson County prosecutor, Brad, wait a minute, let's see. Carlos Lamb. Is that his name? Lamb or Larn? I can't read my own writing. An Indiana prosecutor says one of his deputies has resigned after admitting that he sent an email to Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker suggesting that Scott Walker fake an attack on himself to discredit public employee unions. The prosecutor says his deputy denied sending the February 19th email that suggested Walker have someone pose as a union sympathizer, fake an attack on him, on Walker, using a gun. The guy who sent the email originally said someone had hacked his account, but he later admitted sending the email. The email, which was obtained by the Associated Press, was sent amid daily protests at Wisconsin Capitol against Walker's plan to stop nearly or strip nearly all public employees of collective bargaining rights. What? I mean, I'm not trying to single out Indiana necessarily. Christ, I live in Georgia. But, you know, when you consider Dan Burton and the rest of these freaks and then take a look at Michigan, what the hell is going on? Well, come on, Mike. Stop with the rhetorical questions. We know what's going on. We absolutely know what's going on. This guy who works for the prosecutor obviously is a Beck acolyte, a Glenn Beck slave, and doing what Beck suggests. Pretty incredible. Regarding what's going on in Japan, I want to get to this when we come back from the break. But Tim from L.A. sent this in. Mike, you read a quote from a woman who survived the Chernobyl destruction yesterday, and her advice, run far away. The problem is, in Japan, where to? South? Tokyo's contaminated. Further south? North? With no gas and electricity, sparse, it's virtually impossible. If they arrive in the United States, airport security would turn them back because of the radioactive contamination caused by U.S.'s own General Electric. So like lepers, they are stuck on an island the size of California with the population half of the United States with little or no power. And then there are the elderly. Young folks hold them in high esteem, and my relatives fall into that category too, which is another one of my dilemmas. They live about 50 miles west of the nuke plant in a place called Aizu. Our family lived there for more than 300 years as well-to-do farmers, and if they had the opportunity to leave, they won't. Our family fed the local shogunate in the city, and we were allowed to carry a samurai sword, much like a samurai, though never used for battle. This is a high prestige in Japan. It's so honorable that people used to bow down to my grandmother when she was around 6 years old, and that was in 1908. Even in hard times, our family took care of the people nearby and fed them. We have a rich culture and history in Japan, which General Electric managed to destroy. But the part that's ripping at my heart, the part that makes me mad and on the verge of a nervous breakdown, is that my family would rather die on their land than seek refuge elsewhere. It's not about being elite or conceited, but the lands my family toiled, plowed, and shared their abundance with not only the local shogunate, but to the people, is probably contaminated. And they are willing to die and become one with the land our family name created. Again, this drives me mad that my culture is so damn stubborn. But with their blood coursing through my veins, it makes me madder and on the verge of madness to know a goddamn corporation is destroying our legacy, a legacy of peace and unity, collectivism down the goddamn drain, all for capitalism. My head aches and my heart hurts. Tim from L.A. Okay, time for a break. When we come back, Prairie 2 has something to say about what has happened in Japan. And we've got some other things. So stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Gray has a message. California's Living New Deal project seeks to launch a national inventory of public works built by Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal agencies that were used to get us out of the last Great Depression. The project will reveal what government at its best can do for the majority of citizens and for generations. If you know of New Deal buildings or other projects in your area, or you'd like to help, please go to livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. Livingnewdeal.berkeley, BERKELEY.edu. Thanks, Gray. We'll say it again, of course, during the hour. Okay, regarding my comments about Obama. Email here from Bob and Mary. Mike, love you, but if you think this rational and intelligent black man could jump on a progressive horse and charge, you might be being a bit unrealistic. Seems to me he'd be literally dead and gone if he took the righteous, powerful, progressive positions we wish he could. Well, it goes on here, but let me stop right there. That is not what is going on here. What he's doing, not only is he not jumping on the horse, nobody's asking him to jump on the horse. We've all admitted, at least I have, that what I thought Obama might be was not to be worse than George W. Bush, which is what he's become. So easy on the analogies of jumping or the metaphors of jumping on a progressive horse. Nobody's asking him to do that. You know what I'm asking him to do? Stop acting like Bush squared. That's what I'm asking. But let me go on the email. Wish you'd devote your bully pulpit, your powerful, lyrical, miracle of a voice, and way of sticking it to the wrong towards the filthy right. Come on, couldn't you sell more podcasts by focusing on the real problem, the right-wing corporate greed heads? Like I don't do that. Oh, man. I'm not naive, Bob and Mary write, but I'm a And I'm a passionate liberal and progressive. Yup. And I still believe Obama is a very good man. Up against an incredible juggernaut of wealth and power, they'd snuff him out in the New York Minute if he took the kinds of positions you and I wish he could or would. Once again, gentle email writer, I'm not asking him to take positions of a progressive. I am not so naive as to think that anybody in the Democratic Party could or will ever do that. Again, what I am asking the man to do is stop gutting the Constitution. Stop acting as though he is part of the Bush family, like Bill Clinton has decided he is.
Oh, this is my dad here. I've come to love George W. Bush. Or George W. Bush's daddy.
My letter writer goes on. He needs the masses to rise up and demand ethical, social, environmental justice. And be arrested and then told you have no Miranda rights, right? You really want to encourage your followers, I don't have followers, to abandon Obama? You're working on it. Exactly the point. When Obama tricks the right to lavish him with praise, he's doing what he has to do to stay alive. No, I'm not mush-brained. Come on, you know it's not like that. I'm a lib, and I'd like to think Obama wants us to cry out against this. He's the messenger. He's delivering the message that these things are the things the powerful right are insisting upon. Look past it. Well, let me digress again, or let me comment again. If we have elected such a cowardly man to be president of the United States, that he is doing this stuff in order to please the people who control. This is nonsense. Bloomers in a wad? No, just a different way of looking at the man's position and possible reasons for his actions. It's not what Obama has to do. It's what you and I need to do. Oh, my God. You and I, my friend, have zero power. I'll tell you what you and I need to do. I'll tell you what Americans need to do. We need to stop participating in this kind of garbage. We need to stop participating in the operation of the machine. It doesn't make any difference anymore who is running it. Are you still? Well, apparently this emailer still believes that it makes a difference who is at the top of the pyramid, the alleged power pyramid. Do you really think Obama is acting on his own? He's being very devious up there, and he's doing this to deflect the right, to fool the right wing, and what he really wants is for us to scream and rise up from the ranks. Is that, do people still believe that? Well, apparently this emailer does. Okay, he writes, I can't listen much more tonight unless you can turn your attention to the real enemy. The real enemy. The real enemy, I would think, are people who, what is it about sheep's clothing? People who, oh, never mind. He goes on. How can you witness the outrageous obstructionism and outrageous positions the filthy Republicans and not understand that Obama, a black president in a racist country, has to feign to be quite compatible with the right's desires? What? That is, oh my God, is that a racist comment? What are you saying? The black man has no spine. The black man is a coward. The black man has to kowtow to the white masses. Is that what you're saying? Interesting. He goes on, I still think Obama could serve the progressive cause perhaps far better than we've witnessed to date, but it's going to take a ton of us getting involved in the Democratic Party and making it ours. No, it's not. It's going to take a ton of us turning our backs on the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party is useless. I point you in the direction of the past 10 years. The past 18. What did Bill Clinton do for the Democratic Party principles? Please. He goes on. Okay, I'm mad at you, and you think I'm mush-brained. I still love you and hope you'll keep fighting the good fight in the ways you think most effective. But I'll abandon Obama when he's no longer the best shot we have right now. He's there, and he would respond to streets filled with angry workers and out of workers. Really? Would he do that? Have you got that piece of tape, Kathy? Not tape, but that recording of Obama. Not the whole thing, just the part where, at the end there. Now, Bob and Mary here say that he's there and would respond to streets filled with angry workers. He even said that himself. But Bob and Mary, I address you to Madison, Wisconsin over a period of 10 days. Are you serious? Were you out of the country when that occurred? Were you off the planet? Were you not aware that hundreds of thousands over the course of those 10 days of workers took to the streets and this Democratic president did or said nothing in support? Here's what he said on the campaign trail. Somewhere here.
And understand this. If American workers are being denied their right to organize and collectively bargain when I'm in the White House, I'll put on a comfortable pair of shoes myself. I'll walk on that picket line with you as President of the United States of America. Because workers deserve to know that somebody is standing in their corner.
Couldn't find the shoes, right, Mr. President? Come on, Bob and Mary. Wake up and smell the napalm. But no, I a lot of people of goodwill in the United States consider them Democrats and liberals and, oh yeah, progressives. Yes, sir. We're behind Barack Obama. Of course, he's just a black man. So, you know, he's scared. He's scared that the white folks are going to get him. We'll be right back. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. Subject line, neoliberals are neocons too. Hi, Mike. This morning I received an email from some Democratic caucus with a YouTube appeal for money from Vice President Biden. This was my answer. Somebody ought to tell that SOB Biden that it ain't about the damn money. It's about closing Guantanamo, stopping the killing of Middle Eastern innocent women and children, stopping the torture, freeing Bradley Manning, stepping up for the rights of working people, defending the environment, making void the Patriot Act. Quit giving our money to his banker friends. Give us our human and civil rights that include free health care and education. Bring our jobs back from China, for starters, and then maybe the middle class and working people will have the money he and his crony-ass friends stole from us. The entire neoliberal establishment is the problem. Remember NAFTA? GATT? What Republican did that? Wasn't it Kennedy from Massachusetts who pushed for Rupert Murdoch's Fox News just so Teddy wouldn't be called bad names by the Republicans? Who gave our public airwaves over to the Republican Party? Oh, that's right, our Democratic Clinton. They just don't get it. They're liars, backstabbers, and nothing more than Republicans dressed up in a suit of jackass BS. Remember John Kerry during his campaign? He didn't show his love for the workers of America. He did not put in an 8-hour shift in an auto plant. He went duck hunting and windsurfing. Come on, it's time to call these bastards what they are. And that, and only that, will inspire youth to step up and feel like they're more than just disposable bodies for use in wars that benefit the likes of Jane Harmon and Dianne Feinstein, who have made themselves rich beyond measure from the sale of weaponry, global war, and destruction. Shame on those bastards, and shame on us for being so damn blind to their deceits. That's my two cents. Let Biden roll up his sleeves and pick them out of our wishing well that they've turned into their own personal toilet. Tom. It's getting more and more difficult to maintain sanity. You know, I mentioned it last night about this thug, this rat bastard in Maine, the governor there, Paul LePage, who decided to take down a three-year-old mural in the state's Department of Labor building in Augusta, Maine. It has 11 panels showing scenes of Maine workers, including colonial-era shoemaking apprentices, lumberjacks, a Rosie the Riveter in a shipyard, and a 1986 paper mill strike. The mural was created by Judy Taylor, who won a 2007 competition overseen by the Maine Arts Commission to commission artwork for the department's lobby. Ms. Taylor said, "I don't agree that it's one-sided. It's based on historical fact. I'm not sure how you can say history is one-sided." Charles Scontras, a labor historian at the University of Maine, said, quote, "Totalitarian regimes erase history. Totalitarian regimes erase history." And he says more. But isn't that the point? Isn't that what Winston Smith, wasn't that Winston Smith's job in the Ministry of Truth? Destroy history. Goddamn destroy it. Isn't that what your Governor LePage is doing up in Maine? No, we don't want that history up there. It's too one-sided. That's propaganda like they have in, I don't know, what did the emailer say to the governor? North Korea. Unbelievable. So, the Republican governor of Maine? Maine? Maine is going to do this? Are you kidding me? Something, a painting that honors workers in Maine? And this filthy piece of human waste, LePage, is having it taken down? No, not going to have that up. That's one-sided. Where's all the good paintings up there about what the capitalists have done for Maine, by God? I mean, I got to get reelected. Where am I going to get the money? From workers?
If you want a place in the history books, then do something dumb before you die. Famous for no reason, Mary Antoinette enjoyed her cake. She caused a revolution when she would not share, and her husband lost his head for that mistake. The Hindenburg was a giant zeppelin. His makers made a minor oversight. Before they filled it up with explosive gas, they should fix the no-smoking light.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Lord, there goes Johnny Apple.
5 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Gray Brecken in California. Gray writes, California's Living New Deal Project seeks to launch a national inventory of public works built by Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal agencies that were used to get us out of the last Great Depression. This project will reveal what government at its best can do for the majority of citizens and for generations. If you, gentle listener, if you know of New Deal buildings or other projects in your area, or if you'd like to help, please go to this website and check in. Living New Deal. LivingNewDeal.Berkeley, B-E-R-K-E-L-E-Y, dot E-D-U. LivingNewDeal.Berkeley, dot E-D-U. This sounds like a hell of a good project. So even, you know, even if you don't sign up to help, which is cool, just if you know of projects in your area that would go into this registry to prove to the right-wing nutcases that government is good, government does do good things, then go to the website. See what's there. Look around. LivingNewDeal.Berkeley.edu. Thank you, Gray. From Mary in D.C., hey, Mike, I'm with you. Obama is a total sellout. In 2008, I wasn't under any delusions or illusions about Obama being a progressive. I saw him as a center-right corporatist like Bill Clinton, and I thought he would be at least a smidge better than Bush and definitely McCain. How wrong I was. And yes, how many millions have shown up across the country, particularly in the heartland, to fight against the corporate machine and to try to save what little is left? Oh, then for the middle class, we have yelled, screamed, canvassed, emailed, called, marched, protested, all without incident. Obama calls us sanctimonious and looks the other way. He has turned his back on America and the American people and is now part of the Republican cancerous pathology that is metastasizing across this country and the globe. The apologists on the left make me sick. Mary in D.C., Prairie 2, regarding Japan and other things. Under the subject line, useful information is nice when you can get it. Brent crude oil closed today at $115.87 a barrel, approaching that magic $120 a barrel that the Wall Street bankers have predicted will signal the collapse point of the world economy. Will that really happen? Well, not in the real world, at least not right away, but there is the possibility that a few hundred trillion in derivatives could be triggered since this was established by their public pronouncements as the point of no return, $120 a barrel. Unfortunately, we learned in 2008 that what happens in the paper world does translate into pain on Main Street. Funny how politicians and pundits still refer to Main Street as something real, as if 30 years of Reaganomics hadn't completely done away with Main Street. Try to find a town that actually has anything you could call Main Street. It's just that boarded up section of town you have to drive through to get to Walmart. The U.S. dollar keeps flirting with all-time highs against the euro. If you can't keep that straight, high sounds good, but it's not. It makes stuff we buy more expensive, and in theory, it means we can sell stuff to them at lower prices, which would be good for jobs here, but we don't make anything. The majority of U.S. non-food exports to Europe are pass-through goods from other countries that don't have free trade agreements with the Eurozone, as we do. You can buy more with yen. You can buy more yen with the U.S. dollar than it used than you used to be able to. It's not clear how that's going to work out, but it makes the radioactive imports cheaper. The governor of the prefecture that includes Tokyo has lifted the ban on babies drinking the local tap water. Magically, the radioactivity is all gone! The governor even drank a glass on television. It must have been real tap water because he couldn't completely mask the fear in his eyes. Or maybe it was just shame. Three Japanese workers laying power lines have been hospitalized with radiation burns to their feet and legs after walking through water draining from the reactor site. This is every bit as bad as it sounds. And then some. After weeks of pumping seawater into the reactors, another problem is looming. Besides the contaminated water that leaks away, millions of gallons are boiled into steam, leaving tons of salt behind. This salt is coating the fuel rods and filling in the gaps where the water should flow. At some point, the temperature will start to rise again, and another meltdown crisis will take place, and this time, pumping more water won't help. The company that owns the reactors say the radiation levels are down, but they don't give out any useful information, like the temperature of the water in the storage pools. They didn't tell the electricians laying cable any useful information either. PrairieNumeral2.com. There was something that I wanted to share with you. This may not be the right time. I'm going to go on a tear the third hour. Hope you'll stick around for that. Email here from Drew in Madison, Wisconsin. Mike, below is a short piece I wrote regarding the current fall-up nature of America. Sincerely, Drew in Madison. P.S. We're keeping up the fight in Wisconsin, though it's now essentially being channeled into electoral politics in the courts, but we will ultimately win this war. Here's what he wrote. In a certain sense, the right wing of the corporate capitalist class has been ignorant and misguided, aside from being incredible greed hounds. Over the past 40 years, they've set out to attack and destroy the liberal ameliorative political wing of state-supported capitalism. It's always been this Eleanor Roosevelt-style liberal social reformation that's allowed American capitalism to continue with a humanistic gloss. Now, the best it can do is put mealy-mouthed centrist Democrats in office who bend over backwards for Goldman Sachs and the brokerage houses but do virtually nothing for middle-class working people. And now, via their right-wing stooges in radio and cable, courts, lawyers, and consultants who have made it virtually impossible to organize strong unions, the offshoring of manufacturing, the regressive tax system, and a host of other anti-worker policies, the reactionary wing of corporate capitalism has effectively destroyed its paradoxical supportive counterpart in favor of a speculative finance paper economy that's hollowed out the United States from within and siphoned wealth into the portfolios of the Wall Street oligarchs. This current attack on public sector unions, government services, public education, the pillaging of state treasuries, etc., is the logical result of this process, a process that accelerated after the collapse of Soviet collectivism and Eastern European socialism in the late 1980s. The only option left for the working and the middle class in order to stem the rollback of the social welfare state in America is social agitation through rallies, boycotts, disruptions, demonstrations, and nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Drew in Madison. I just wonder again, always, continually, what it's going to take. What it's going to take to put the necessary number of people in the street to let the oligarchs know that it's time for massive demolition and reconstruction. We'll be right back.
And a union mother way over in that union burying ground. Well, I'm gonna sleep in a union coffin. I'm gonna sleep in a union coffin way new grave brings a thousand members way over in that union burying ground.
One, two, make someone else some cash.
The liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour, and this hour has been sponsored by Gray Brecken, who is involved in California's Living New Deal project, that project seeks to launch a national inventory of public works built during the last Great Depression by Roosevelt's New Deal agencies. The project will reveal what government at its best can do for the majority of citizens and for generations. If you know of New Deal buildings or other projects in your area, or you'd like to help, just go to livingnewdeal.berkeley, B-E-R-K-E-L-E-Y, berkeley.edu, livingnewdeal.berkeley.edu. Okay? And thanks for the sponsorship, Gray. And our first hour sponsor, Kay Petrini, thanks. And yeah, there's a third hour sponsor, Paula. So we'll do that coming up. This caught my eye also a couple of days ago, just a couple. The Humane Society of the United States put this out. Florida and Iowa, as you probably know, they've both been hot spots, past and present, for the movement to combat some of the worst abuses in industrial agribusiness. The factory farming industry is fighting back now in both states, in Florida and Iowa, both of them firmly under control of Republicans, right? Both states are trying to make it a crime, make it a crime to photograph or videotape farm animals. They don't want to criminalize animal cruelty. They want to make criminals of people trying to document abuse and to put an end to the cruelty. Now, the quick answer to this is, okay, stop eating animals. That's the quick answer, and it's a knee-jerk answer, and there is a different answer, and the answer is, as long as we are going to eat animals, why is it so difficult to consider the idea of treating them humanely, since they are not self-aware and do not know that they're going to have their little heads cut off? Why force them to live in the kind of conditions that the Humane Society and independent videographers have shown to be just vile? Lawmakers, Republicans in both states, have introduced bills to establish criminal penalties for going undercover at agricultural facilities and simply taking pictures. Jesus, God. Now, the exposés that the Humane Society have put out there for public consumption aren't just important for raising public awareness about mistreatment of animals. Their investigations have also led to the largest meat recall in U.S. history. They've led to misdemeanor and felony cruelty convictions, closure of rogue slaughter plants, disciplinary actions for government inspectors not doing their jobs, None of this is going to happen once Iowa and Florida and other Republican-controlled, Nazi-controlled, corporate-controlled states make it a crime to document, to take photographs. It's a crime. It's going to be a crime to document Now, it's understandable why factory farmers would not want this made public. You know, the images of featherless hens and animals living on top of each other and calves kept in conditions that are just beyond belief in order that people can have veal on their dinner table, for God's sake. Pigs being struck with metal bars by workers. And as the Humane Society says, the response to all this should not be, as in some country ruled by a dictator or a junta, to have the strongman grab the cameras and smash them to the ground. No, it shouldn't. It's not just the exposés of animal cruelty that's involved here either. These new policies proposed to bar the exposure of unhealthy and unsafe practices couldn't come at a worse time. The slaughter industry has long argued for self-regulation, and now with the Republican, the corporate created depression in this country, government inspection programs are stretched so thin, and they're about to be done away with. That's the next thing. You know, doing away with all regulations is what Nazis are all about. People get sick. People get ill from eating meat or eggs or what have you that have been raised in or butchered in conditions that are filled with disease and feces and germs and viruses and filth. The factory food industry doesn't give a goddamn about any of that. They don't care. What are you talking about here? Once we chop it up and spray a little carbon monoxide on it or whatever, bleach, whatever the hell it is they put on to make, you know, the slabs of meat look pink and desirable, you know, we don't care. You ever been to a slaughterhouse? Well, I've told that story before. Yeah, I've been there. So, like I said, the quick, simple answer is stop eating meat. The more involved answer is stop legislatures from attempting, Republicans, from attempting to pass laws that say if you go into a meat packing or factory slaughter facility and document images that are so rotten, so vile, as to turn a person's stomach, if you do that, if you expose these bastards, you're going to go to jail. Stick around. When we come back, I'm hoping to talk about the possibility of the extinction of religion. Remember the French philosopher in the 18th century, Denis Diderot, who said, man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. I guess most people in this country are aware of the alliance between fascism, corporatism, whatever you want to call it, right-wing politics, and Christianity, evangelicalism. It is something that a lot of folks just don't want to talk about because a lot of people, say, over the age of 50, were brought up in a certain kind of basic Protestant or Catholicism, Protestantism or Catholicism, you know, go to church on the holy days and be a good boy and a good girl, and Jesus watching over you, say a few Hail Marys when you screw up, or go to your Methodist church and take communion. And, you know, it was all kind of innocuous and background noise. Religion, for a whole generation of people growing up, religion was just background noise. It was just there. Yeah, okay. Nobody talked about, are you saved? That's like asking somebody if they've bathed recently, or, you know, are there stains on your underwear? You know, please, isn't it a little personal? Am I saved? But of course, all that went away. And now we have this marriage between religious fundamentalism and corporatism in America that is becoming so destructive. It is destructive. Becoming is, you know, that's maybe 20 years ago. It has now become this monster force that is destroying everything in its path. And the first place that this evil, this marriage between Christianity and corporatism, which is a monstrous evil, the first place that it is really decided to do bloody battle is in the public school system. This is a war that's being waged. It's been waged for quite some time, ever since the Supreme Court ruled back in the 60s that the state could not impose religious belief on children, which really translated into meaning that, you know, Christian prayers or prayers of any kind in a school were in violation of the Constitution. Then the Christian fundamentalists went absolutely berserk. You know, the Muslims or the Jews never said a word. Neither did the Hindus or the Wiccans or anybody else. It was the Christian fundamentalists who went absolutely nuts. I can remember when I was in elementary school being required to stand with my head bowed and my little eyes closed while the teacher read some sort of a prayer, and then being forced to do the Pledge of Allegiance. I think most kids in most public schools are still forced to do the Pledge of Allegiance. And it is forced because it is an oath of allegiance, it is jingoistic, and it also contains a nasty chunk of supernaturalism in it, with the under God thing that was added when I think I was in the fifth grade. Anyway, I digress. This horrific, negative, destructive, anti-life force now that's sweeping, has been sweeping the country. This marriage of religious, Christian religious fundamentalism and corporatism is doing more damage, I think, than the average person realizes. You know, I was talking last night about all the different states, I think 9 states that have introduced within their legislatures laws that would deny science. You know, to deny science because of ignorance is one thing, but to deny it specifically by the will of a lawmaking body, the legislatures within these states, that's something else again, isn't it? Is that not fascism? To destroy accumulated knowledge. Isn't that fascism? And to replace that accumulated scientific knowledge with religious superstition, nonsense, talking snakes, swallowing whales, boats that bob on the surface of the earth that is covered with miles of water, people turning into pillars of salt, 9-headed demons rising out of the sea. What is that? The answer is it's madness. It's insanity. totally, completely. There is no redeeming value to religion. None. Zero. It is all corrupt, every single bit of it. If someone seeks to find a moral guidepost or ethical means of ethical behavior, the last place I think one would look would be religion. Are you kidding me? Religion is egocentric. It is insane. It is about ghosts and demons and dragons and, I mean, just crazy stuff. If people are ethical or conduct themselves in a moral manner, while at the same time claiming to represent some religion, I think they're doing that in spite of the religious training. They have overcome the corruption of their minds with this religious nonsense. But I'm getting way far afield here. Alternate.org recently had an interesting piece about religion going extinct in Western countries. Not here. Not here. In this country, it still dominates our politics. It absolutely corrupts, destroys, and befouls everything that it touches. Religion does. Everything. Every single thing. Every person, every concept, every theory. It just corrupts and destroys every bit of it. But as Alternate.org recently had posted, we know that languages die out. We also know that religions die out. How many people believe in Zeus? Can I see some hand? How about Poseidon? How about Apollo? Yeah, hello? Anybody out there still believe in Thor? But at one time, you see, these gods were omnipotent, weren't they? Omniscient, weren't they? But is there a chance to see religion as a whole die out in modern societies? A new study predicts that is exactly what is going to happen in Australia, Austria, Canada, the Czech Republic, Finland, Ireland, the Netherlands, New Zealand, and Switzerland. How about that? This list is notable because it includes the two countries most similar to the United States. Canada and Australia were both founded mainly by British settlers. How could it be that they are getting ready to bury this sick Christian faith, and we've handed over one of our two viable political parties to a fundamentalist version of that religion? Now, I maintain that we've handed over both. You show me a Democratic candidate for anything. Dog catcher, toilet flusher, a street sweeper, senator, representative, president in the Democratic Party who, if asked, do you believe in God, is going to stand there and say, actually, no. So, I would disagree a bit. We have handed over both of our now dead corrupt political parties to this fundamentalist version of one specific religion. Now, I realize there are a lot of Jews in Congress, but it doesn't make any difference. Christianity has as its genesis, no pun intended, the Jewish history of their own people, or the history of the Hebrew people, however you want to put it. So, big oil.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, what's the chances of religion going extinct? Alternate.org has a piece about this. It's astonishing to think that Christianity might soon be extinct in Canada, at the same time that it is or has morphed into something so vile and evil in American society. that so evil that it can destroy reproductive choice, it can destroy a woman's right to privacy, it can destroy the teaching of biology and geology and astronomy and physics and chemistry, all of it. It's that powerful here, but the Canadians apparently are saying, you know, think we've had enough? We are not more inherently religious than Canadians, say, or Australians. But we have a political system here that allows financial elites to enlist religious fundamentalists in their service. In other words, religion has tremendous utility in this country that it doesn't have in Canada. I'm using Canada just because they're right up the road. Richard Weiner of the Research Corporation for Science Advancement and the University of Arizona says the idea is pretty simple. The idea posits that social groups that have more members are going to be more attractive to join. And it posits that social groups have a social status or utility. For example, in languages, there can be greater utility or status in speaking Spanish instead of a dying language like Quechuan in Peru. And similarly, there's some kind of status or utility in being a member of a religion or not, he says. He goes on to say, quote, in a large number of modern secular democracies, there's been a trend that people are identifying themselves as non-affiliated with religion. In the Netherlands, that number is 40%. The highest was in the Czech Republic, where the number is now 60% of people in, you know, a predominantly what would have been or was at one time, and then again, a Catholic nation, 60% of the people in the Czech Republic said, no, I'm nothing to do with religion. In all the countries that they surveyed, this Research Corporation for Science Advancement, they have found, and you know, you can tell by the title, they may have a bias, a bias towards science and reality. But in all the countries surveyed, they discovered that religion, except one here, that religion is inching its way toward extinction. Our political system in this country actually encourages a form of religious fanaticism that is actually dying out in countries similar to ours. They seem to be similar to ours. But if you stop and think, the position of the fundamentalist evangelical Christian church in this country and the position of the right-wing fanatics, the political right-wing fanatics in this country, you know who they are, the spoken preference of the commentators in society that are nuts, just completely complete sociopaths, whether it is Newt Gingrich or Glenn Beck or whoever it is, you find this incredible linkage. It's not linkage, it's more like conjoined twins between this oppressive, repressive, fascist political model and the oppressive, repressive, fascist Christian model. They are joined permanently. How did that happen? Why did it happen? Are you curious? I certainly am. That's one of the things I think that will be revealed in the book I'm reading right now, Political Ponerology. Study of how evil, blatant, straight-ahead sociopathology has determined the direction of so many cultures, so many political entities, so many societies, so many religious movements. It has been evil of the most definable kind. And you know, the question to me always is when you see something that is not working and in the process of not working is destroying, and you see people continuing to do it over and over and over again, like, for example, vote for a Democratic candidate. you know, people otherwise that you would assume had some common sense left. Republicans have absolutely no ability to make any kind of independent, irrational decision at all. One assumes that a few Democrats still do, and I'm dividing this on a political bias, obviously. Democrats, one assumes, still have the ability to think clearly. So why, or do they? Why do Democrats continue to vote for a Democratic candidate, knowing full well that no matter who they vote for, if that person is a Democrat, he is going to turn around and utterly and absolutely, or she, betray them? What is that?
Listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Before the hour. As part of this fascist slash religious, but I repeat myself, attitude in this country. And by the way, I haven't mentioned yet, this hour is sponsored by Paula, who writes, "Thank the gods, if they exist, that I still have a job, and may you, Mike and Kathy, continue as well. A shout out to Serolta, while I'm at it. Love to all its liberals, Paula." Thanks, Paula. Why this unholy alliance between fundamentalist religion and fundamentalist fascism in this country? And it has happened, and it is what we're doing now. We are existing under a religio-fascist or a fascio-religious, take your pick, religionist form of political system, and it's getting worse. I get a lot of emails from people who condemn me now, liberals or Democrats. I wouldn't say they're liberal. They couldn't be liberal, but they're Democrats. So, and their condemnation is pretty strong. Apparently, I've wandered too far off of what they have determined is the reservation that we liberals are progressive. Progressives or Democrats are supposed to wander around. When I talk about the war crimes of Barack Obama and agree with Dennis Kucinich, for example, although other people are saying the same thing, that he has now committed impeachable offenses. We're not supposed to say that. We're not supposed to pull the curtain back and show the gnarled religious fascist who is running the levers. And that the great Oz is represented by Barack Obama, now is Barack Obama, before it was George W. Bush. We're not supposed to mention that, you see, because he's a Democrat. And I hear this squealing that comes from so-called liberals or Democrats. Well, Mike, we have to have Barack Obama in there for another for a second term, because if we don't, you know, we've got a couple of Supreme Court justices who are either going to retire or die, and we must have a Democrat president, or excuse me, a Democratic president to appoint a Supreme Court justice. It'll be a fascist if we don't. I think that line has been so promoted by corporate America. Corporate America works both sides of the fence. Fascist America, corporate America, capitalist America, they don't give a damn who's president. Don't you get that yet? Has that not sunk in? Apparently to a lot of people it has not. While you and I are down here in the dust and the dirt and the canvassing door to door and the handing out the literature about this candidate and talking about that candidate, the real money, I'm not talking about the grassroots candidates now, and there are still a few left, and they are Democrats. That's not what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Democratic Party and the major candidates, the recognizable names. And I think anybody who is conscious of what's going on would disassociate themselves from the Democratic Party completely anyway. Come up with a different name. But while we are down here doing all the scut work, corporate capitalist religious America sits back and says, yeah, that's right, boys and girls, go ahead. We're designating you as, you'll be Democrats, and you'll be Republicans, and you'll be teabaggers, and you'll be conservatives, and you'll be liberals, and blah, blah, blah. Now, go fight. Go fight! Scream at each other, pick and pull, pull each other's hair, kick each other in the shins, while we continue to utterly and absolutely devour your system and you and your children and everything about you. So I get these emails from people who are just so pissed off. I have betrayed, you see, the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party principles. I have, with this little 25-cent radio program, I have committed this huge betrayal. They are going to vote for Barack Obama again because Barack Obama, you see, is, and if you push a little bit against that tissue paper structure that is their belief in Barack Obama, the Democratic Party, it collapses. But don't push against it, because when it does collapse, then they get very pissed off at you and say, well, I'm never listening to your goddamn program again, ever. Okay, that's fine. You shouldn't be listening to this program if it affects you that way. You really shouldn't. It's bad for your health. At Think Progress, they have an article about it. There is a buried provision in a House Republican bill, the U.S. House, that would cut off food stamps to entire families if one member of the family strikes against a corporation. No? Haven't heard about this, have you? The backstory is that around the entire country, right-wing legislators are demanding that middle-class Americans pay for budget deficits on the state level and the federal level that are caused by the killers, thugs, liars, destroyers, greedheads, and sons of bitches on Wall Street and in our political system. That's why we have these massive economic meltdowns. But in order to pay for these budget deficits, Scott Walker comes to mind immediately, and the rest of these Republican bastards, they're attacking workers' collective bargaining rights. That, you see, is the problem. School teachers, firemen, police officers, sanitation workers, workers in the Bureau of Division of Motor Vehicles and Public Health and all those public workers who are just parasites, aren't they, huh? This is the new and the last frontier that religion and fascist America together is attacking. Now, a group of House Republicans is launching a new stealth attack against union workers. Republican Representatives Jim Jordan of Ohio, Tim Scott of South Carolina, Scott Garrett of New Jersey, Dan Burton, him again, of Indiana, and Louie Gohmert of Texas. All Republicans, all murderous, God-fearing sons of bitches have introduced H.R. 1135, which states that it is designed to, quote, provide information on total spending on means-tested welfare programs, provide additional work requirements, and to provide an overall spending limit of means-tested welfare recipients. But, one section very deep within the bill adds a startling provision. This bill, if passed, would actually cut off all food stamp benefits to any family where one adult member is engaging in a strike against an employer. Now, the bill also includes a provision that would exempt households from losing eligibility. Quote, if the household was eligible immediately prior to such strike, however, such families shall not receive an increased allotment as the result of a decrease in the income of the striking member or members of the household. What? What does that mean? Nothing. It doesn't mean anything, so forget about it. Entire families can be removed from eligibility for food stamps while a single adult family member is striking. Now, what effect is that going to have on the few workers who are still part of collective bargaining units? What effect is that going to have? Huh? A worker that's considering going on strike for better wages or benefits or working conditions or the workplace safety. These Republicans, these Christian, God-fearing Republicans, hallelujah, you'll find them in church every Sunday, have buried in a bill that ostensibly is supposed to take another look at the way information is put together on spending on means-tested welfare programs. You know, we got to get the budget deficit under control here. Let's go to the food stamp here thing. And then deep inside is this provision. If any member of a family that is eligible for food stamps or is receiving food stamps strikes against his or her employer, the entire family. How many kids are in your family? You have four children? Ah. And grandma lives there, and nobody has any money. Okay. Well, if Uncle Charlie goes out on strike because the boss has just decided to take away his retirement plan or his health insurance, then all of you lose your food stamp eligibility. Every one of you, your children, your grandmammies, all of you. These are Christian Republicans who are doing this. Christian Republicans. Approximately 42 million Americans on food stamps right now, which is a record since the food stamp program was initiated. Oh, yeah, this hour has been sponsored by Paula. I don't know if I'm supposed to give the last names anymore, am I? Paula writes, thank the gods, if they exist, that I still have a job, and may you, Mike and Kathy, continue as well. A shout out to Sirolta while I'm at it. Love to all its liberals. Paula. Thank you, Paula. Thanks for sponsoring the hour. So these, let me go through the Republicans again. These Republican representatives, Jim Jordan of Ohio, Tim Scott of South Carolina, Scott Garrett of New Jersey, the totally insane Dan Burton, he's still around, of Indiana, and Louis Gohmert of Texas have introduced H.R. 1135, which states that it is designed to provide information on total spending on means-tested welfare programs and some other stuff, but deep inside the bill is a provision that says families who have a family member who goes out on strike against his or her employer, that family would lose all eligibility for everybody in the family for any type of food stamp assistance for which they might be eligible. I mean, and of course that is in keeping with religious fundamentalism, Christian religious fundamentalism in this country, which has nothing to do, please don't misunderstand, Christian evangelical fundamentalism is as far removed from Jesus Christ as North is from South. These people are not followers or believers in the teachings of the Jewish rabbi of 2,000 years ago named Jesus. These Christian fundamentalist evangelicals, they would spit on him. They would burn him. They would set him up on his cross yet again. You see, these are not followers of Christ, not even close. These are defilers of the message, or I should say Jesus. They are defilers of the message of Jesus. So please don't be fooled. Walk into one of their 20,000 member churches someday if you want proof of that. But I digress yet again. How rich is Congress, the Congress that is attempting to make it illegal for a family member to strike against his or her employer and then institute collective punishment in the form of collective denial of eligibility for the basic necessity of life, food. You really don't need anything else, you know? You gotta have food, right? But these filthy, rapacious Christians would deny food if you participate, or a family, not you, if your uncle, your auntie, your family member, your brother, your sister, anybody in your family. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean living in your house, your basement, your attic, down the street? Who participates in a strike? The Center for Responsive Politics found that 60% of Senate freshmen and 40% of House freshmen are millionaires. 60% of Senate freshmen in this Congress, 40% of House freshmen are millionaires. The statistics prove that Congress is, quote, overwhelmingly populated with billionaires and near millionaires who often own multiple homes. That's according to Dan Egan at the Washington Post. Here's a quick look at the numbers. Number of new House members in the 112th Congress, 96. Approximate share of House freshmen who are millionaires, 40%. Number of new senators in the 12th Congress, 16. Share of Senate freshmen who are millionaires, 60%. Now, we're only talking freshmen here. Approximate share of ordinary Americans who are millionaires, 1%. Median wealth, estimated wealth of a Senate freshman, $3.96 million. Medium estimated wealth of a House freshman, $570,418. Medium estimated wealth of an American over the age of 18, $25,149. Number of freshmen who own stock in General Electric, 17. Number who own stock in Bank America, 11. 9 invested in AT&T, Cisco, Johnson & Johnson, Microsoft, Procter & Gamble. Amount of money collectively invested in Citibank by freshman lawmakers, between 1 and 5 million. Number of millionaires in the last Congress out of a total of 535 members, 261. I mean, it just goes on and on. Estimated wealth of the richest member of Congress, Representative Daryl Issa of California, $303 million. The criminal, Daryl Issa. Oh, God. So to speak. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.